Imagine getting this class assignment in college. Use Google Earth, a few thousand military documents, and a couple of TV shows to find out what you can about a major power's nuclear weapons arsenal. Oh, and you have to translate all that stuff from Chinese. 3 years after Georgetown University professor Philip Carber assigned that homework, his research team of students pieced together a report that shines new light into the massive tunnel complex that China uses to hide and transport its nuclear missiles, and provoked a sometimes outraged debate about the possible size of China's arsenal. Former Pentagon official and now Georgetown professor Philip Carber joins us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you on Talk of the
Nation. Thank you, Neil.
And I gather this all began in an odd sort of way with the earthquake in China in 2008.
It did. I was on a defense panel, and the chairman of that panel had seen some reports that that suggested a nuclear weapon might have gone off, or certainly there were a lot of cave-ins that it would have affected China's nuclear arsenal related to Sichuan. The area where the earthquake occurred was the epicenter of it was would be like happening in Los Alamos for the United States. Mm-hmm. It was the center of their nuclear research, and tragic. I mean, the number of the people lost their kids in those schools,
sure,
that pancaked,
yeah,
and so forth.
Yeah.
So they knew that I had an arms control class focused on Asia, and we'd been looking at a number of issues related to Asian military issues and how to get it constrained. And so he said, hey, how about having your students take a look at it? So we started looking at it, and we didn't – what we found on the Sichuan was what we concluded conclusively: a nuclear weapon had not gone off. There was clearly a lot of security and concern about radiation and stuff, so it was probably some kind of problem, but we were – really not able to have anything conclusive. But in the course of that, we started tripping over a lot of Chinese documentaries and video showing the work they were doing on their missile forces and building a huge complex of tunnels.
Now, we are familiar with nuclear missiles being stored underground, silos in North Dakota, silos in Novosibirsk, among other places. This is something on a different order.
Yeah, what the Chinese did, and they've been doing for actually several decades, is instead of going vertically down, and so you can actually see the hole from Earth and having one location, they went horizontal, and you would, and they would build literally a complex, a honeycomb of tunnels underground. They've described this a typical complex as having 10 kilometers of tunnels and about one opening for every kilometer. So you're in this honeycomb network of tunnels, and the missile hides in there, and then it can go out, it can fire, and then it can drive back in, rearm, refuel, reconstitute the force, and go out another tunnel, or go from one tunnel complex to another.
So this is not just a few of these. This is 3,000 miles,
yeah,
of tunnels.
We'd been doing the work for about 15 months, and we're just wrapping up. And we thought we had an interesting story, but a lot more questions than answers. And on the 11th of December, 2009, the Chinese publicly announced that they had been spending the last 25 years since 1985 and had built 5,000 kilometers or 3,000 miles of tunnels. And you could have picked me up off the floor.
your jaw, at least. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, first of all, that can, you know, that suggests a lot of things. For example, there is one particular unit in China that is in charge of all of their nuclear missiles, particularly the long-range ones.
They have an organization called the 2nd Artillery, which is kind of a weird name because you go, second, why would you call it second?
And why would you call it artillery? Well,
right.
Missiles kind of artillery.
Well, what's interesting, Chou Enlai personally named it so that outsider, and for 15 years, for its first 15 years of its existence, it was top secret. The name itself was chosen so that people couldn't figure out that this was really the missile force. But this is their China's strategic rocket force, like RSAC or the Russian strategic rocket force. And they're also in charge of not only the missiles, but they're in charge of the country's nuclear weapons. So it's a relatively large organization.
So they'd be in charge of even the ones on their submarines, for example.
It's not clear whether they're in charge of the naval ones. That is frankly ambiguous. But they are in charge of the Air Force ones. But they're not the only ones doing tunnels. They're the only ones who do tunnels for the missiles and the nuclear weapons. There's more tunneling going on in China, both civil and military, than every place else in the world combined today. It's There's a lot of highway construction, railroad construction, the Air Force, the People's Armed Police. Everybody's building tunnels.
Well, one reason is they looked at the results of the war that NATO waged in Kosovo, also in Serbia, and said, that's interesting. First, the United States and its allies have tremendous air power and very accurate, too. But when the Serbs hit stuff underground, it didn't get hit.
Yeah, exactly. They spent a lot of time studying that. And by the way, our report was intended to not raise the question, not to demonize the Chinese for building tunnels. Our interest was from an arms control perspective. If you're building these tunnels, then it raises, it challenges certain things that we've had in terms of how do you get negotiated constraint for the future. And so that was really our focus. It's become somewhat controversial, but I try to insist that really our focus is not to demonize anybody, but rather say, okay, how do we get in a negotiation and sort of think about having a mutually negotiated constraint?
Because, for example, Russia's missiles, going back to the days of the Soviet Union, and American missiles are, everybody knows where they are. There's a degree of transparency. All of this has been negotiated in strategic arms limitation treaties. So those silos have caps on them. People understand what's beneath that cap, that sort of thing.
Here's giving you how serious this is. We and the Russians are in the INF treaty, in which we abolished an entire class of tactical and intermediate range missiles. The Chinese now have 1,500 of those missiles. We and the Russians have zero. The Chinese are adding about 100 missiles per year. These are tactical theater missiles, both conventional and nuclear. In the end, we and the Russians cannot stay in that zero treaty. Either we're going to get the Chinese in or we're going to get out, one way or the other.
Well, some people might say, what difference does it make if the United States has 5,000 warheads and the Russians have 8,000 warheads and the Chinese have 400?
It isn't the warheads. In terms of the INF treaty, Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, Philippines, Singapore, none of these countries have any missile protection or their own missiles, nor do we have missiles that would respond. So what happens if somebody has...
Sure we do. They're in Minot, South Dakota.
No, these are ICBMs. Those are ICBMs.
Yes, but if the Chinese dropped a nuclear weapon on Tokyo, we would respond, no?
Well, no, because what's interesting is, what makes it challenging is that these are dual-capable missiles. So these 1,500 missiles can attack conventionally airfields. They can now a new class can attack aircraft carriers or large ships. So the danger to people living on the periphery of China is that this huge imbalance then can be used offensively. So they then look to us and ask for protection. And we say, oh, yeah, well, in the old days, we'd send reinforce with our Air Force, mm-hmm. and we'd send an aircraft carrier. Well, all of a sudden, now we're going, wait a minute, these things can take out an air base, they can take out Guam, they can sink an aircraft carrier, or may in the next couple of years. So all of a sudden, this becomes a very unstable issue, very much like the INF debate in Europe in the mid-'80s. So our argument is that these missiles are hidden in tunnels, and we see them move out. They will deploy from one tunnel complex, practice firing, and then they move to another tunnel complex, reload, and shoot again. So from an arms control perspective, you'd like to say, okay, let's kind of get these under control. It's better off to get you guys in a treaty than us and the Russians to break out of it and try and respond.
Well, it's interesting you say from an arms control. Some of your bitterest critics are in the arms control community. This is based on a calculation that you made in the study that there could be as many as 3,000 Chinese warheads when that's roughly 10 times more than what the generally accepted number is.
And let me emphasize, I've said it in every reporter's ask. I don't know how many nuclear weapons China has, and I don't claim I do, okay? If you look at the tunnel complex, I would argue that no one else, unless they have some top secret paper or talk to a Chinese general on the outside, knows either. There's a huge complex. So the question is, what's in it? Now, it's interesting. The Chinese, if you look at the Chinese writings, they talk about having a safe distance between missiles of approximately a mile when they're in the tunnel complex. So if you said, there was 1 mile between missiles and I got 3,000 miles of missiles, 3,000 miles of tunnels, then that does raise the question of whether there would be a larger number than we have seen or believe. My own personal belief is they have a lot of reloads. That is, that you have a missile launcher, and that same missile launcher, just like us and the Russians in the old Cold War, one launcher could fire several conventional missiles. He could also fire several nuclear missiles. And that's and it's that uncertainty, that question, that then, and it's not going to go away. I mean, people can yell at me, and they have, but it's only going to get worse as China builds up its force and more attention is given to the tunnel. So we're going to have to get into negotiation with them and say, okay, guys, you know, do you really want to pursue this? What can we do to constrain it? What can we do to have better confidence? And I'm sure they're going to ask stuff of us, and we ought to be willing to offer stuff to them as well.
We're talking with Philip Carver, government professor at Georgetown University, who led a team that researched underground tunnels where China hides its nuclear weapons. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. But you've been around this business for a long time. A report like this will have consequences. There will be people who say, wait a minute, we are basing our estimates on China's nuclear arsenal on old theories. They could have, according to this report, as many as 3,000. Therefore, we should not cut the number of American missiles. And they're going to wave this report in their hands.
That's true. There's that effect. And there's also the effect of people who have built a host of assumptions about what the Chinese have. One of the arguments that they have such a small stockpile is the argument that they haven't produced enough fissile material.
Plutonium or highly enriched uranium.
If you look at those assumptions assume that they stopped producing in 1991 and in the last 20 years have not produced any enriched uranium. Those assumptions assume that the Chinese have produced a small amount of plutonium for their military but have not converted any civilian plutonium, of which they have should have a lot, given all the civilian reactors. Not one ounce of that has been converted to the military, and yet you can't account for where it is. So, and I'm not saying they have. I'm not saying they have any more warheads than the minimum. But the evidence is a lot more ambiguous than it is commonly portrayed. So, and my argument is we ought to be engaging them and trying to get them to be a little more explicit.
As you know, your critics say some of those estimates that you use were based on long debunked web postings, some, in fact, based on an estimate by an American naval aide back, I think, about 30 years ago.
There's a whole bunch of estimates. So let's sort of talk about it. I think, frankly, that specific argument is very much of a cheap shot and sort of scurrilous. But so let me sort of address it. If you go back to early 1990s, the National Resources Defense Council produced a great book. I actually wrote a very positive review of it on Chinese, British, and French nuclear forces. And in that book, they said, they could have around 700 in their inventory. The leading scholar on China's nuclear development, John Lewis, said about the same time they had as many nuclear weapons, that he had been told by the Chinese they had as many nuclear weapons as both the French and the British combined. The Russian General Staff in 1995 published a report that said they had 2,000 nuclear weapons. And the Russians know them better than just about anybody because they gave them much of the technology for their reactors and they've been targeting them. So 15 to 20 years ago, people were talking about a force that was anywhere from twice to five times larger than the number we currently have, we currently estimate. So not unnatural to ask, what happened to those warheads? Were those estimates...
If they ever existed.
If they ever existed. Were the estimates off? Or were they old warheads, maybe for aircraft, and they've remined them, which is very possible? But we're not accounting for it. And that's a legitimate question that needs to be addressed and not just merely treated as a demagogic issue. Again, I'm not making a claim, and certainly our research didn't say, yes, there's all these weapons. But it is not illegitimate to go through and address various estimates. And by the way, the number that's sort of contentious, this 2,350, is the number that's used on China's mainline encyclopedia, the online encyclopedia, which would be like their Wikipedia. It's called Baidu. And there's a big article on the underground works, on the underground tunnels that they've now put out. And guess what? In the middle of that article, it says, we had 2,350 warheads. Again, I'm not saying that that's right, but it's not illegitimate to at least raise the question, hey, there's a whole bunch of estimates. We're probably not going to get the answer. One of the things we found, Neil, that's really interesting, is the Chinese had built a nuclear reactor, 21 kilometers of tunnels under a mountain. We knew nothing about it. It sat there for 25 years, unused. It was called the Strategic Reserve Reactor. This is Fuling. this reactor was to be used only if after a nuclear war started, so that they, so if their other reactors had been taken out, they could produce new nuclear weapons. So you have this entire reactor complex designed specifically to build warheads underground for 25 years that we didn't know anything about till they went public about it. So it is not unreasonable to say, hey, there's a lot of stuff buried. There's a lot of questions. We're not going to be the last people to raise these. And we raise them in an arms control perspective. Others are going to raise it in terms of, oh, doing a buildup or so forth. So I think the student research is responsible in the sense of raising this issue, and then people can sit down and discuss it.
One of the sources they used, your students, was a couple of Chinese TV shows, the equivalent
of
research via looking at 24.
These were awesome. These were, I call it the equivalent of The Good Wife. The Strategic Rocket Forces, China's Strategic Rocket Forces, they have their own television studio. They had a Chinese general, who's a major general, who is a television director, award-winning director. He produced, he wears a uniform, he produced, in the 2nd Artillery, two major TV docudramas. They went for about 24 weeks. One was in 2004 and one was in 2008. We found the 2008 one right after the Sesh one. They played once a week. Everybody gets their popcorn and sits down, and both of these are extremely accurate in terms of the uniforms, the details, and guess what? There were tunnels all over them. and it actually helped us understand things that we would see the writing in their military literature that we weren't quite sure how they were handling it. So they were insightful.
Philip Carber, professor at Georgetown University, thanks very much for coming in today. Appreciate it. Tomorrow it's Talk of the Nation Science Friday. The War on Cancer turns 40 this month. Join Ira Flatow for a conversation about how far we've come. We'll see you again on Monday. Merry Christmas, everybody. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Cohn in Washington.